Blog Talk Radio.
On a time, brick by brick, our past has been laid, from legendary figures to the everyday people like you and me. All have played a pivotal role in our journey. If the past could speak, what would it say? This is a show that explores that, from the good, the bad, and the ugly. Let's try to make sense of it all together. When the nonfiction is more frightening than anyone could imagine, we look to art. So help me in telling the story that begins with Once Upon a Time, a show that gives history a voice and brings beauty to ugliness. Once upon a time, events and people shaped the world that we live in today. So join us in the journey of exploring our past a show where poetry and reality meet to withstand the test of time. And welcome to our first kickoff show of Once Upon a Time. I am your host, Duke of St. Paul, Dexter Bailey, and with me is my lovely co-host, Miss Pam Ray.
Hello, Dex. How's it going?
Hello, Pam. It's going well. I'm excited for this show. We had quite a lot of rights to kick this thing off. This was an incredible showing by a great amount of support that the group has and friends that, you know, we have around the site. I was just really flattered by the turnout we've had here tonight. So,
absolutely. Me too. It was not only quantity, but quality. I read through the rights earlier this evening, and oh my gosh, I feel like my mind was on leafy. I'm like reading these lines. I'm like, this is so powerful. This is, you know, I mean, over and over again, there were so many rights in this for this show that just hit hard, which isn't surprising given the topic. And
absolutely. I'm really excited. I'm glad to see Quicken on the board. Did we pick up anybody? A guy named
We did.
Sexy
we
Rexy
have
is
the
allowed?
Oh, we have the one and only intelligent, extremely intimidating, and very sexy, intimidating Rex. Welcome, Rex. Glad you could join us.
Popcorn, peanuts, get your popcorn, peanuts. We're selling nuclear waste.
Awesome.
Come on down,
thank
and we'll
you
set
support,
your blow.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for showing up.
You're welcome. Congrats.
Thank you.
Yes, definitely. Congratulations.
Yeah, we do have to. Go ahead. Sorry, Pam.
Oh, I was going to say, also adding in my congratulations and how much I love the material, the subject, the theme of the show that you've chosen to do.
Yeah. Well, thank you. And you want to know something? It was kind of I was knocking the rust off at making the contest, and then Pam sprinkled some of her fairy dust on it, and all of a sudden we went from like 2 rights to 20 rights. And so I got to hand it to Pam. That's why I'm glad that she's on here to help me. But picking a topic like Chernobyl, the, you know, April 26, 1986, the explosion happened, which is widely considered the worst nuclear disaster to ever happen, nuclear power plant disaster to ever happen to the world. It's something that's still felt today. It's something that's still going to be felt for 24,000 years in the zone. It's going to be uninhabitable. What had happened is the reactor 4 exploded during a safety target. So they were trying to run a safety mission on it. And then what happened is that they didn't realize they pushed it way too far. And then flaws in the making of it exploded the entire thing. And so Pripyat at the time had to be evacuated. Pripyat was an up-and-coming city. It had all of the Soviet Union's best going to the city because of how it was. I mean, it had swimming pools, as you've seen. It had different attractions, the Ferris wheel, all these things that slowly became the kind of grim imagery that we used in some of our prompts were part of the attraction. I think there was a city that was lined with like 25 rose bushes. So it was very well kept, and just in a flash because of this explosion and because of this man mistake, now that entire area is not habitable for 24,000 years. And it's still going to be something that's felt for a long time. They're still wondering what's going to happen to this elephant's foot that's that's slowly melting through the cement in that place, and there's still a lot of worry about what they're going to do to that, and maybe if it hits the ground, what this could do to our water. And so this is going to be a problem that generations have to deal with for a long time. And, you know, and I we could sit here and talk about the intro for this for a long time, but the point of the show is that I think that I had messages from people saying, God, I did a lot of research on this, and I did this, and it was like, that was awesome, because I thought that that's perfect. That's what we're looking for on the show. So I'm not going to spend a ton of time on the intros on this, because we could talk for forever. I'm going to let some of our poets kind of give us insight on some of this. And some of our topics were the firefighters. Poor guys were some of the first people that were there. Another topic that was very popular was the dogs. All of the dogs had to be left. Some of them were shot. But there's still a population of like 800 and some dogs that roam the zone. Like you said, some of the imagery, some of the people that were there. The operators, there was one that died immediately that still was never recovered that's there. So there was a lot to go at, and I'm really excited to kick this thing off. So,
absolutely, absolutely, and me too. So if you're ready, we'll go ahead and get this ball rolling. And,
all right. Yeah, let's go with the first one.
All right. Well, the first poem we have is Meltdown by Silent Tree. And Rex, would you give that a read for us, please?
Meltdown by Silent Tree. Countdown. The harvest of the grains, furious to whisper the ages, a clock's hand denied. As night fell over the town and an apricot-glazed sunset wanes. He dresses for the shift and his wife settles the children to bed. The same old routine as with any other night, hopelessly predictable. She packs his lunch into an aluminum pail and fills the thermos. He picks up his coat and made way toward the bus for set reactor 4. The sky was clear that day and the stars were bright against dusk. A full moon stalked the windows, reflecting the short ride ahead. As the bus rounded into the plant, steam rose an hourglass tower. He stepped off through concertina doors and swiped his key card. A green light burns. He turned the handle and punched in for evening shift. With control room hums, a maze of dials and reactor core thermostat gauges. Each were assigned our duties. I was first to man the cooling tower, check each valve wheel, and take manual readings for the test. On the fluorescent tubes, the warrants of corridors stretched into silence, save for the familiar echoes of rubber soles on polished linoleum. I traipsed the halls to containment doors of the cooling tower, swiped my identification card, and passed through above the core. The labyrinth of steel pipes hung above the rusted grill gangways. A tone rung out across the facility's loudspeakers, signaling test start. Fingers eased back the resin covers as key knobs snapped into place. Control rods extracted as particles collide. A countdown had begun. The genie. The harness of creation is to blind against beyond the curtain. The lead engineer scurries across the room. His key twists the manual override. He lifts the plastic lid and his palm slams the button down to scram the rods. The bottle. The aftermath. And poem.
Great read there, Rex. And great right here, Silent Tree. You know, I get the feeling that Silent Tree has a little bit more to add onto this piece, and which is all good. Like I said, sometimes you can't rush anything because it says words more to come here towards the finish. But what they had written, which I loved, is that taking us into first-person kind of narrative of the entire build-up to this, the countdowns, and then the pales and fills the thermos. Where was it? Where was it here? The control rods extracted as the particles collide, the countdown had begun, and the resin covers That's really having being educated on the entire science behind what really took place there that night. And so I really like and appreciate that they did their research. So very well done. Great read. And I believe we have Stelina with us.
We do. Welcome, Stelina.
Hello. Hello. Sorry, I was on mute.
No, not a problem. Thank glad you could join us here, Stelina.
Oh, it's nice to be here. Hi, darling. You know, and congrats on your show. So looking forward
to hearing
some nice poetry.
Thank you. Let me go back to Pam. I'll give you a little bit of time to settle in, and if you want to give a comment on this one. We'll go to Pam right off the bat, and then I'll come right back.
Thank you. I really like this one by Silent Tree. I'm quite a fan of her writing, and recently she has been doing these story-style poems broken down into sections, almost like a vignette, and leaving some of it for later, which is nice because you get that I get to anticipate what's coming next. And I really like the observational tone of this, right? And how it isn't so much about the moment of the explosion, the moment where everything changed. You know, that comes near the end of the poem. But the main part of the poem is really all about those quiet hours of normalcy. Before tragedy strikes. And I think anytime there has been a tragedy, whether it's on a personal level, like losing someone you love that you just talked to hours ago, or you know, on a broader spectrum such as this, where life seems almost boring, and then this happens. You know, I can just imagine just wanting to go back to that normalcy. And her word choosing is always quite brilliant and descriptive. And I like how she brings in the everyday, like he dresses for the shift and his wife sells children to bed, the same old routine as with any other night, hopelessly predictable. Just amazing lines and very well done.
Great comment there, Pam. And Stelina, did you get a chance to hear it or read any of that?
Well, I got a quick chance, but I have to agree with Pam on everything she says. She's sort of taken my thoughts. first of all, I also found she's a really amazing writer, and yep. She does a great job with everything that she writes. She puts thought into it, you know. She obviously has done her little bit of research as well. But what I do like about this is the same as sort of what Pam said, how she starts off with just, you know, the normal routine of everything, one day like the rest. And I love the first two lines, you know, to harvest of the grain's fury is to with the ages, a clock's hands denied, as night fell over the town and an apricot glazed sunset wanes. I love that phrase, apricot glazed sunset, beautiful. So, you know, there's beauty there. That she's picking up on with the mundane everyday life. And then, of course, she goes on, you know, and you can see then that this terrible thing happened. And like you said, there's more to come. So it will be interesting to see how she finishes this. But I thought it was a great write, all in all. I need to go back and have another read before I can leave a comment, but I will be doing so. So well done, Silent Tree. Great read. Great write and great read as well, Rex.
Thank you. Thank you, Stelina. And Rexer. Rex, let's go with you.
Well, I got to start with the genie, that second note. Those opening lines had me thinking of what happened 41 years earlier when Oppenheimer witnessed the Trinity test in July of 1945 after the first explosion. He noted from the Bhagavad Gita, "Now I am become death, the destroyer of words." That was his impression after witnessing the first explosion. Because nobody knew what was going to happen at that point in time. There was one theory that doing this would set the world aflame and kill the whole planet by exploding one of these bombs, because they had no idea what to expect. And all the testing that went along with it afterwards was kind of horrific, what was done as far as injecting plutonium into people's cedar, what effects were exposing people close proximity to a nuclear explosion out on the islands. There was a whole lot of stuff they didn't know yet. They went ahead and tried it out on anyway. They understood what was coming and what it would progress into. But this, that second, the genie, I like that thought, the genie. The genie is out of the bottle. And you're right, that there is note of offering up the bottle, what comes next, and then the aftermath as the final note to this piece and finishing. And I did like the that opening first stanza was clean and crisp and offered up such an easy, pleasant, normal day until that minute. And then all of a sudden, all hell breaks loose.
Great comments, Rex. And yeah, I liked the metaphor of talking the genie, you know, too, because, you know, they rubbed it the right way, and but they didn't come out, didn't pop out to grant him any wishes. It popped out and released a nightmare. So great job, and very well done. Pam, back to you.
All right. Well, up next, because we just never know how things are going to go on that tiny little island of hers, and we want to make sure we get to hear her read her write. I have put up Selena's write aftermath, and Selena, would you please give that a read for us?
I certainly will. Hope I don't fade in the middle. Okay, so this is aftermath. Bones of a city, flesh falling away. Like Silent Hill, it has its ghosts, and change still with the passing of time. The hustle and bustle is silence now, under a barren blanket of fallout snow. Children and mother haunting deserted streets. Eking out an existence from day to day wasn't much, but 'twas all they had, never believing they had much to lose. Until that fateful day. Harkening back to nostalgic normalcy, when days were long with back-breaking toil, yet sleep was comforting in their bed. Then all the deer was torn asunder, battered like their hometown of Pripyat, leaving them bereft or slowly dying. Voices whisper on the woeful wind, return our ancestors from whence they came. No more land, no more our land to bear this stain. End poem.
Great right there, Selena, and great read. I'm going to let Pam.
Thank you, dear.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Wonderful read and write. I was so glad to see that you were inspired. The imagery in this is just brilliant. You know, there are certain places when you see them or when you're there, you feel as if there are ghosts there, that the spirits that are of the deceased left behind. And I'm actually being very literal when I say that, although some places are just haunting because of what they represent. But you know, you remind us that, you know, life continues on. There is still that children's laughter. There is still people amongst the tragedy trying to eke out that existence. But also that ending stanza is just brilliant, with voices whispered on the woeful wind, return our ancestors from whence they came, no more our land to bear this stain. And it is sadly a stain that continues to be a part of that area, continues to be a part of history. And what I really like about that, in that part of your right, and I like so much of it, is the fact that while it's clearly written through the Chernobyl prompt, with the mention of Pripyat and, you know, the other parts of it throughout, you feel like it could be almost any tragedy where a mass death continues and humanity continues to be affected. And so that's what I really like about this. I felt that this rite really had broadened horizons. So excellent rite and very well done.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Great comment, Pam. Yeah, this was a great rite, Selena. You know, bones of a city, flesh falling away. Right away, you're using the metaphor of the city falling apart, or is a metaphor of what happens to the body when it's hit with this much radiation, and the flesh that's falling away, and it's still unchanged over the passing of time, and the place that it had, you know, the children's laughter and the haunting streets. I agree with Pam. It does seem like a place that still has some ghosts almost there. It was left so quickly. These people were existing from day to day in normalcy. And then all of a sudden, from the comfort of their bed, and all of a sudden they were forced to be gone. And the last stanza that you have here, the voices whisper, woeful wind, return to ancestors. It is a proud nation, you know, Ukraine and the Soviets, and they're a very proud people. And this was truly a stain. And this was one where it made them an embarrassment. And not only that, it's their land, and their land that, you know, that back then had been, and, you know, over the course of time had been paid for, you know, by blood, all of the Europe and everywhere was carved out. So to have this big of an area just cast off forever, and to be that proud in the fact that you screwed this up and all your people died, it truly is a stain. And so very well done, Selena, and great right. And
thank you very much.
Rex, what did you think?
Well, you kind of took all my voice. I did too, like the literality and the metaphor that went with that opening stanza of Bones of the City, Flesh Falling Away. And the note to Silent Hill was a nice touch. It's ghosts unchained, still the passing of time. Yes. And even look over the hustle and bustle, the fact that there was so much built around that city to aid in the comfort of normalizing the place as not just the home, but the place to be. Because you had to have the families. You couldn't just keep pumping in your workers without having their families and their lives connected to the area. So they did quite a bit. And it was the place to be back then. And that was its destruction, that and what happened next. Because it only took 3 more years before the wall came down. And the Soviet Union was no more the Soviet Union. So this was kind of a forerunner to the fact that they were falling apart at that point in time. And maybe that led to some mistakes because sense of being in the air that, hey, things are on the change as far as the country itself was going. And it also reminded me of another thing. You know, this wasn't the first real nuclear accident this we've had on this planet. We had 7 Mile Island back in the early 80s or late 70s in Pennsylvania. But there was one a few thousand years ago. that nobody mentions or talks about. And they didn't have it back then. But then again, you can't deny the fact that rock was vitrified, literally melted. And the fact that you don't get trinitites without the fact of a nuclear explosion. And it was somewhere out in, I think Middle East or somewhere, a couple of thousand years ago. A few thousand years.
Great comment, Rex. Yeah, man has been screwing this up for a long time.
Sure has.
Kind of one of many. And what was the Soviet leader at the time that had the stain, that had the birthmark on his head. What was it?
Gorbachev.
Gorbachev blames this for the collapse of the Soviet Union. But like you said, I think it was falling apart much before that. But I believe in a book of his that he makes the claim that of blaming Chernobyl for the official collapse of it. So, Pam, back to you.
All right. Well, up next we have May Day 1986 by Unexpected Bill. And Dexter, go ahead, please, and give that a read. And go ahead and call on me last to comment, please.
Not a problem. This is May Day 1986 by Unexpected Bill. May Day, 1986, through the smog of disaster I write, I can see the billowing smoke catastrophe. My home is my sanctuary. I shall stay. This may be the end of my life today. Pripyat, Ukraine, Thursday, May 1st. May Day, 1986, my refusal to leave has consequences. Unforeseen calamities of a nuclear event. The rations are dwindling quickly away. I'll journal this for history. Leave my name. Pripyat, Ukraine, Thursday, May 8th. May Day, 1986. I have left my home in search of supplies. Found some canned meat hidden poorly. The absence of my neighbors is haunting. In my travels, I can see I am not alone. Pripyat, Ukraine, Thursday, May 15th. May Day, 1986. The days are long and lonely, nights worse. My mind keeps drifting, back to better days. The dogs follow me now. Every time I leave, I can hear them approaching, tracking me. Pripyat, Ukraine, Thursday, May 22nd. May Day, 1986. My days are numbered, yet I still stay. The dogs are hunting, the pack's hungry, the howl at the moon. I hear them call. My fate may be delivered by canine teeth. Pripyat, Ukraine, Thursday, May 29th. I'm weakened to the point I can barely move. My days are nights. I'm nocturnal like dogs. They hunt me unceasingly, yet I survive. Dogs are my friends, uneasy neighbors. Pripyat, Ukraine, May 30th. May Day, 1986. Madness has begun to replace my hunger. The dogs can sense it, drawing ever closer. I'm not sure anymore why I'm hanging on. They come for me, hungry. Pripyat, Ukraine, Saturday, May 31st. May Day, 1986. The dogs nearly succeeded. They now prey. But last night I found a food source again. My strength is returning, but there is risk. The dogs have territory. I must intrude it. Pripyat, Ukraine, June 1st. May Day, 1986. Pripyat, Ukraine, June 2nd, May Day. And so, Pripyat, Ukraine, Tuesday, June 3rd, May Day, 1986. Pripyat, Ukraine, June 4th. End poem. And Rex, let's kick it off with you.
All right. I like the May Day thought, because that's a term that's used whether you're on the ocean in a ship, on a plane, when you yell May Day, everybody else is quiet because there is trouble and you need to be attended to in whatever way is possible in the moment. So I like that thought, drawing on that all the way through, even though he's drawing on each day as May Day, the thought of May 1st. Then he rolls it into weeks, May 8th, May 15th, the 22nd, the 29th, the 30th, then the final day, the 31st, and hits on each portion of the week as to how he is doing. These are log journal entries, so to speak, his private memoir, because he knows he's not going to be getting out. And the idea of what's going on behind the line, what most would look at as enemy lines, because by that time, the whole place would have been enclosed and barbed wired, so nobody who was left inside would be able to get out, because let's face it, you know you're going to die, and there's no need of infecting more people with that. So you try to keep everything contained. And it's going week by week. So you get a little bit more notation of what happened that week, the fact that he's found a little bit of canned food. He knows his neighbors are gone, so he's the last one, maybe the lonely one left in the city. And he's battling the dogs week by week. Some are friendly, but he knows they're also hungry, and they need to be fed. And the worry hits on the idea that he might end up going down that road as being food for the animals, because they have no compunction. They're hungry. They will take what's handy, whether it's alive or not. It really doesn't matter, because when you're hungry, you need to feed. And the last few would have been what goes into June, but it either comes to the point where he has succumbed to the poison that he's been infected with, which is probably true, but he's probably also succumbed to the dogs. So those last 3 days walking the June, the first, second, third, and fourth are empty entries to which he would have presumably added to. But since he had to venture into where the dogs are, he left his journal at his hovel, his cave, his private place where they really didn't bother him because it was hidden well, or maybe it was up high.
Very well said, Rex. And I'm sorry I kind of botched that ending, unexpected, Bill. That was a very effective ending. As Rex pointed out. Stelina, let's go with you.
Yeah, well, I think Rex has sort of, again, taken the words out of my mouth here. But first, I like the picture he used, because it just shows the desolation, you know, of what happened there, and this is the middle of the street. So the picture already gives us, an image of the place itself. I also like the idea of the genesis, that I thought that was very clever, you know, to show how the sort of what this person is going through every day, a little bit more, starting off, you know, with that energy and that will to survive, but as the week goes on, you know, as time goes on, it wanes with of course the effects of hunger and you know, everything else that they're going through. I mean, here we can see in this stanza, the days are long and lonely, nights worse. My mind keeps drifting back to better days. The dogs follow me now. Every time I leave, I hear them approaching, tracking me. Yeah, and again, as Rex said, you know, the dogs, which sort of initially might have been comforting to him, you know, their presence. They're getting hungry, they're getting desperate, and they're starting to see him as food. You know? So, yeah, you know, the sense of foreboding. So very well done, Bill. I enjoyed this write very much.
Yeah, well said. I liked the angle that he took on this prompt, because there were people that bought this, and as much as the military came in and moved in and took people out, there still were people that were able to hide and stayed within the zone. There's still people that are like vagabonds that are staying in the apartments and things like that, or that have moved in to the zone. And it's not like they got Cub Foods or Aldi's or something down the street, you know. And so the day's got to be long. You got to be on a tight diet. And I can't even imagine how you could even be surviving and living there. And so that's what this kind of show is based on when I talk about giving history a voice. It's giving those people kind of a story or what it would be like maybe from their aspect of staying there and not having any supplies and not having anything. And so this is a fantastic write, Bill, and very well done. And Pam, I'd like to hear what you have to think.
Oh, yes. Well, I liked what everybody had to say, and I thought you did a wonderful read of that. I did really enjoy and appreciate how Unexpected Bill wrote this in journal entry. And I too liked the May Day thing, not only because of, you know, the things that Rex said, which, you know, made a lot of sense and really is that kind of connection of, you know, needing that immediate help, but also because it makes me think of, I was reading earlier, I think it was yesterday, but I can't remember. Anyways, I was reading about Chernobyl and particularly about the Ferris wheel and what do you call that? Not a park, but
there's kind of an amusement park there. That's one of the famous ones. You're not talking about the pool or nothing. That's another one of the famous locations is the pool.
That's what I was trying to think of was the amusement park. But the amusement park was actually supposed to open on May 1st. So I thought that the fact that he started this on the journal entry on May 1st worked really well and was a great irony towards that fact and that history. I do like that he wrote this in the journal entries. And the other thing is I really felt like there was this sense of reality when it came to how he wrote about the dogs. Because, you know, you and I, we both watched that video with the dogs. I watched it with my daughter. I told you, I said, you know, I'm going to go to there and I'm just going to go there and feed those dogs and pet those dogs because they're just so beautiful and sweet. But you can imagine those first days. Can you imagine that first month, even that first year of these people who won't leave and these animals who have been abandoned? And they're all feeling hungry and wild and on edge. And so you just kind of can imagine, you know, having that fear, especially where he says, my days are numbered, yet I still stay. The dogs are hunting. The pack's hungry. They howl at the moon. I hear them call. My fate may be delivered by canine teeth. You know, and those are the kind of things you had to worry about. So there's really quite a gritty reality to the way that he has written this in the voice of an individual person. So very well done.
Great. Well said, Pam. And, you know, when I actually initially picked this prompt, I was looking at that picture of that dog, and I thought, oh, my God, I'm looking at getting a new puppy here coming up, and I'm, like, looking at that dog going, oh, my God, there's a cute dog. But the reality is that, you know, dogs in the zone, it's like, you know, people are looking to see if they can adopt them and stuff. Well, it's like, well, this thing could actually kill your daughter in 5 years of cancer. But at that time, it was also a starving dog, too. So it's he brought out the dark side of the dog to Chernobyl, which normally everybody's kind of like, oh, that's a cute thing. So that's a great angle to take, Bill. Well done. And back to you, Pam.
All right. Well, let me just say a quick hello to Chinaski in the room, who is, you know, is hanging out in L&P. So very cool. And then I will post the next poem, which is Pripyat Wheel by Sakura Falls. And it goes like this. Inside a dark, misted dream, dying trees reach to the sky. Souls lay at rest. Ferris wheel is by jest. Inside a lonely Ferris wheel, a dark, misted dream awaits. I close my eyes for just a second. I found myself inside a vessel. I look towards the dying trees. I'm reminded of the looping bees. It's why I chose to stay here in Priyapat, a place of abandoned dreams on my wheel of loneliness. End poem.
Great read there, Pam. And I believe Sakura Falls is a very new poet. And so welcome, Sakura Falls, if you've never written to an all-poetry show or a late-night poet show. You know, hopefully we hear from you again. Hopefully you check out some of our shows. Hopefully you join the group, Late Night Poets. And I'm not sure if you already are or not, but this is my first time seeing this poet. And what a brevity. They really brought us there. The dying trees reach to the skies. Souls lay at rest. The souls lay at rest in the Ferris wheel by Jess. That whole opening stanza really set the tone of such a chilling little rite. A place of abandoned dreams on my wheel of loneliness. Wow. It's really... like it almost gives you goosebumps of the way that they wrote to this prompt. And I thought it was very well done, and I really hope that we hear from you on a regular basis, Sakura. So let's go to Rex. What did you think about this, Rex?
I like it. It's almost offering up the Ferris wheel itself as the voice, even though it does kind of walk a little bit with the notice of humanity, but it offers up the voice to the Ferris wheel itself, the one who stayed, the one who still offers up that signaling note to, I am here. And it does kind of hit on that idea of even though parts of the arena will stay quite poisonous for thousands of years, there is quite a bit of our area that is it's safe enough to do tourists. They're running tourists through there. Or even you look around, a lot of the creatures that weren't there beforehand have now returned. Deer, fox, and wolves now roam freely. And they're not, nature has a way of walking itself point where even though some cannot walk within its arena and live, there is a note that nature can overtake the problem issued and deliver it back to a position where some can enjoy the privilege of walking in and living in within that arena once more. Although there is quite a bit, and I'm sure the animals know that, there is quite a bit in an area where they won't venture and nothing ventures because it is poison for quite a while, but life does have a way of coming back to the point where, you know what, accidents happen and some things come back to refold itself within nature and without seeding the ground fully.
And let's go with you, Selena.
I to use alien power to read my mind tonight. But I have to agree with everything he said there. What I liked about this, first of all, the image of the Ferris wheel is really a haunting image. You know, you can imagine this Ferris wheel full of people laughing and enjoying themselves, you know, in this place where they didn't really have a lot of enjoyment even before. You know, it was a very sort of not dead place, but didn't seem to be much for them to do on a regular basis, entertainment wise. So, the Ferris wheel was probably a big sort of attraction for them, and you can see it and you can hear the children laughing. So I like the fact that they chose this image, and I like how they approached the image too. So, you know, I mean, the beginning as well, I really like. Inside a dark, misted dream, dying trees reach to the skies. I thought this was very poignant, right? You know, you can feel, even though, excuse me, even though it's a brevity, it got such a lot in there. Sorry, I'm a bit dry this morning. It's very hot here. It's 35 already. They got such a lot into such a small poem, and which is what I always admire about brevity writers, most of all. But, yeah, I love the two lines opening, and I love the two lines closing. You know, a place of abandoned dreams on my wheel of loneliness. So, yeah, I thought this was an excellent write by Sakura Falls. I've seen some of their work before, and I don't know how long they've been around, but what I've seen was very good. So I hope they continue on. So well done.
Well said, Selena. And Pam, I believe we're on you for the last comment, and take us to the next one.
All right. Well, I really liked this brevity, and it's good to see Sakura Falls. I know she is fairly new. I've seen her write at least in a few of our contests and shows, so you know it's been good to read her, and I hope we continue to get to see her poetry. I really like how she wrote about the and I'm not sure, am I the pronunciation of that word, that town, yeah. Pripyat?
I believe it's Pripyat. Oh, Pripyat.
Pripyat.
Pripyat. Okay. So I like how she wrote about that, particularly the Ferris wheel, because as I told her in my written comment, you know, I have always thought that the abandoned Ferris wheel, Pripyat, was one of the saddest, most haunting images. And I really feel like her word choices in this brevity captured that feeling, captured the feeling you get when you look at that picture, that Ferris wheel, and think that it was supposed to be something used for fun, and you know, to bring families together, and so it's very literal in the sense that this wheel has been abandoned. The dreams have been abandoned by these people who had to leave, but it also works so well on a metaphorical level, on the idea that perhaps she feels this abandonment, this loneliness, and the wheel reflects what's inside her. So just an amazing write and very well done. And up next, we have Lexicon's Rubicon by Eric Svensson. And we have a SoundCloud for that. So go ahead and find that. And here we go.
Lexicon's Rubicon. Class of 2023, take note. Unpoetically speaking, Lexicon's Rubicon. Regrets wormwood food always comes too late. Bitterness tends to dissipate over once upon a time. By fluke, fate, or mistake, Lexicon's Rubicon. Chernobyl means wormwood in Ukrainian and Russian. Revelation 8:11. And the name of the star is called Wormwood, and the third part of the waters become wormwood, and many men died of the waters because they were made bitter. Now, in the immediate future, indefinite, we wait with bated breath. The Large Hadron Collider is the world's largest and highest energy particle collider, built by the European Organization for Nuclear Research, CERN. It snakes for 27 kilometers underneath the France-Switzerland border near Geneva. With its inception, biblical scholars sounded dire warnings. Revelation foretells the opening of hell's pit. Will CERN's compressing the God particle in endless collisions lead to our fatal, final demise? Will intentionally creating a black hole lead us to Dante's Paradiso or Inferno? By fluke, fate, or mistake, Lexicon's Rubicon, Con plus CERN equals concern. 37 years after bitter wormwood Chernobyl, are we to be changed in a blink of an eye? 3 plus 7 equals 10. 1 plus 0 equals 1. Number 10 in numerology denotes new beginnings. On course, and poetically speaking, of course, in poem.
Awesome SoundCloud there, Eric. And very well done on this poetry. Rex, we'll start with you on this one.
All right. Let's go. Lexicon's Rubicon, that Nord of Rubicon, crossing that point of no return, so to speak. The lexicon, the thought of verbiage. Regrets, wormwood, food always came too late. Business tends to dissipate over once upon a time. I like that. That's a great opening thought. I like the word wormwood. I've used it quite often. Wormwood cholera is a nice note. It's what goes into absinthe. It's also poisonous with I think it's thujone, that oil that comes with it. So it does. It was one of those drinks that back in the day that everybody loved to get into because it puts you over the edge into another realm. And sometimes you died, but sometimes you came back with a little bit of third eye superlative thought to go with it. So the wormwood, I didn't know that Chernobyl itself means wormwood in Ukrainian and Russian. I'll have to remember that one. But it's fitting. And then that note of Revelation 8:11, and the name of the star is called Wormwood. The third part of the waters became Wormwood, and many men died of the waters because they were made bitter. But that hits on the idea of why I like to use Wormwood as that poisonous note to that which is. And then he hits on that note, discern. And then there's been a great concern about the Large Hadron Collider and what it might and might not do if it's opened up to its full potential. We walk along that note again of exploring that which we don't know and then inhaling the breath of our own demise because we opened something which we shouldn't have. And some thought think it might be that portal to something which we will never be able to close again, whether it's hell's pit, as he puts, or it's that note to a black hole, which then swallows everything with it. I like this for the simple fact that he runs. Hey, look, you look at the word concern, con plus CERN, that idea of double dipping into the thought of the Hadron Collider, as being a con, and the word concern being something that we offer up as a note of, oh, are you okay? Well, no, not really. That's where the note to the lexicon's Rubicon comes in, because there are plenty of words we got out there, which if you drop off and look into, you separate the two of them, all of a sudden, oh, yeah, there's a whole lot of other meaning behind, especially when you, the use of Lucifer. in playing off of some of the things we do, like luciferase. That's a note to the COVID vaccines. Why would we go down that road? And why, again, is the patent number on it 666? So what are we trying to tell ourselves while keeping it hidden on the back end of things? And I like that note of the back end. Number 10 in numerology denotes new beginnings. And on course, unpoetically speaking, of course. Again, on course and off course. Are we on course or what? And whose on course are we walking on? The more you
well
know.
Said there, Rex. Well said there, Rex. Great comment. Let's go with you, Pam.
Yeah, I really like this. And I like what you had to say there, Rex. Great observation. You know, I thought, too, that was really cool to find out, because I didn't know this either, that Chernobyl means wormwood. And I thought, how befitting, especially given the connection to wormwood in Revelations 8:11. It's almost as if we are fulfilling these prophecies that speak on evil and the coming of evil. Because we are that evil. I really think this this contest is, oh my gosh, I'm just blown away. I don't know if blown away is the right phrase to use on a show about Chernobyl, but I am. And I really like how Eric says in the beginning of this poem, class of 2023, take note. Unpoetically speaking. And I like that because he's putting aside his need to be a poet, to come up with the perfect imagery, the perfect metaphors, the alliteration, whatever else, you know, we might think of when we're in poetics mode. And he's saying, I have a message for you. And I want you to read this message and I want it to sink in. And I told him, educational and poetic, always a brilliant combination, in my opinion. It's powerful imagery. It speaks on the need to open our eyes to see not only what has already happened, but our own impending doom that we're bringing about for our own, by our own selfishness, our own greed. And I did like his response to me, which was, I guess poetry isn't always about butterflies, buttercups, and bluebells, Pam. Yet even in the worst-case scenario, one still searches for that silver lining on doubt's cloud. And I thought, amen. That is so true. So it's just a wonderful write and very well done.
Great comment there, Pam. And Selena, how about you?
Well, I think everything's been possibly said about this. I love Eric's writing for many of the reasons that Rex and Pam have already touched on. And, you know, he always gives us a lot of food for thought. He always does a lot of research. He knows what he's writing about. This you know, this line, Chernobyl means wormwood in Ukrainian and Russian. I did know that actually from my students, you know, because I have taught a lot of people from the Ukraine and Russia. So, you know, at times when you're discussing some certain events in their country, they have mentioned this to me before. But I liked the way that he brought that up from Revelations, you know, and connected it, as what has already been said. And this note of, you know, the apocalypse and impending doom, and it, for them it did happen, you know, it was an apocalypse. It's a very, very smart write, very cleverly done, as all of Eric's are, and I really appreciate what he puts into his poetry. I don't think there's anything else I can say. I can go back and I can have a really good read of it again. And taking every little nuance. It's quite a short one for Eric, to be honest. But, you know, in sort of what he usually writes is much longer, but it's so powerful and hard hitting, you know. So well done, Eric. Nice one, my dear.
Great comment there, Selena. Yeah, I thought that this was another great write and a great message mm-hmm. to future generations, and not just on this, because, you know, we always like to think that we, you know, we can, oh, now we have a grasp on this, now we have a grasp on this. Well, the technology is constantly pushing forward. And just like back then, technology is pushing forward at a pace faster than we can really predict. We can't predict what's going to really happen with this. And that's why I like that he brings in to the equation the new things that are happening in Europe and the new, you know, nuclear and just technological advances that we're having. Can we really predict how this is going to shape out? Or do we just think that we have such a good grasp out of it because of history? So I thought that this was a fantastic piece. Pam, back to you.
All right. Well, up next we have Carnival by Papa Terminus and Rex. Will you give that a read for us, please?
Carnival by Papa Terminus. I heard the Ferris wheel screech to a halt. When the carnival shut down, sirens blared in this Chernobyl town. There wasn't any children's laughter when the schoolhouse burned down. Saw the soldiers running, while I was just a face in the crowd. Now the streets are littered with debris. Mongols roam the streets, sniffing the air for a morsel to eat. The buildings remain empty. After, as the fallout spills, that siren still sends a chill. Overgrown vegetation snake up towards the seats, with vines that are creeping up. Cover the Ferris wheel. And palm.
Great right there. I mean, great read there, Rex, and great right there, Papa. Let's go to Selena for first comment.
Yeah, well, I do always enjoy Papa T's writes. He's a very talented writer, especially of dark subjects. And this is a dark subject, let's be fair. And I really like how he starts this. I heard the Ferris wheel screech to a halt when the carnival shut down. Sirens blared in this old town. Nice touch of rhyme there. And, you know, for me, I can imagine that this, I talked about it before, that this would have been the main entertainment in this city and, you know, always going around. So the very fact screech to a halt is really a poignant touch here. It's always going, you know, the kids are always on it, and all of a sudden it stopped. Why? So they heard the sirens blare, and that was it. But there wasn't any children's laughter when the schoolhouse burned down. So again, he's going from the Ferris. You can imagine the children's laughter. But then, so he talks about the schoolhouse burning down. It's very, very well written. It's very well crafted, and I really like this sort of idea, you know, that someone is standing in the midst of all this chaos, and it's like time is standing still for them, and all this chaos is going on around them. They're sort of in a silent vacuum. That's the feeling I got from it. I thought it was an excellent write. Very well done, Papa T. Nice one.
Great right there, Stelina. And I believe we have Cal on.
Hey there.
The phone.
Hi, Cal.
Hey, Seth. Glad you could make
everybody.
It.
Yeah,
hey,
it's such
really
an important
glad you
subject.
Could make it.
Yeah, thanks for hosting.
I'm gonna give you one comment to get settled, and then I'll come back to you for that one. I'm gonna give Pam it, and then I'll come back to you, Cal.
Okay.
Does that sound
thanks,
good?
Dex. Sounds good.
All right.
Good for me.
Pam, you're up.
Yeah, I really... All right. Well, I really like how Papa Terminus decided to write this with the dots. The dots, I forget what they're called, but with the three dots in a row that represent the idea of continuation. He really did a great job of not only using imagery that sends chills up and down your spine, but also sounds like the Ferris wheel screeching to a halt, the sniffing of the air. And I really like how he captures at first the chaos of the aftermath of the explosion, you know, how it reflects. I feel like that this right really reflects well on that fear of the unknown, that fear of death, you know, and then the continuation of life. And what I like is that while overgrown vegetation snake up towards the feet with vines that are creeping up covering the Ferris wheel, those are wonderful lines. And it is dark. It's dark to think of this place that was once filled with life being taken over by vines. And it's almost like they're a metaphor for the humanity being choked out of this area. But they are also a symbol of life. These vines growing are a symbol that life continues on. So just a wonderful write and very well done.
Well said there, Pam. And Cal, I'm going to bring it back to you.
Great comment, Pam. You know, for me, you know, and thank you. I can't stay too long, but it's kind of early out here, and I have to get going with the day. But I just wanted to say how important the subject is, and especially here in Europe, you know. And for me, this poem is kind of a premonition, and I've seen these kind of scenes just recently during the war, you know. So, I mean, it's kind of, you know, the imagery that he puts out, you know. Pop, he really knows how to put the images out, and with, you know, very, very precise and accurate imagery, you know, metaphors, you know. So for me, this is just a eerie image that can actually happen again, you know. So, and it is happening again if we're not careful. So very good images and very powerful say statement. And those mongrels, you know, actually they're very friendly, right? So it just goes to show you how nature has that staying power. And well, you know, we're the ones who are going to go first. So excellent, right?
Well said there, Cal. And we'll go to Rex here for final comment.
It starts and ends with the Ferris wheel, and that's important because this is actually twofold. You look at those first two stanzas, it's told from the perspective of the child in the moment. The Ferris wheel screeches to a halt. Saw the soldiers running while I was just a face in the crowd. Now, the last two stanzas walk it 10, 20 years into the future and looking back at what is now representative of that arena. Now the streets are littered with debris. Mongrels are on the streets. Buildings remain empty. That siren still sends a chill. Remember, going back in time, overgrown vegetation snake up towards the seats with vines that are creeping up, covering the Ferris wheel. Coming right back to the Ferris wheel as that note of pleasure going back to 86 and 85 when this got erected for the fact that it was something for the kids and how that still sits heavy within the mind because of where it started and now where it sits.
Great comment there, Rex. And I left my written on here for Papa. This is a fantastic write. Back to you, Pam.
All right. Well, since he doesn't have a lot of time, because I know it's early morning and he's got to get his day started, I'm going to go ahead and put up Chinaski's write, Finger on the Trigger. And Cal, you were nice enough to supply us with a SoundCloud, so here we go.
As the sun brightens horizon, lifting above chaos disorder left by the humans, one single air of fuel, radiant particles brightly spewed and we chewed on the world, summoning scandal. Might at any minute ooze from smoke-choked closets into light, drop notes through empty passages of rising stars. Silence pungently piercing, ghostly voids that quietly lingers, the crowd sucks her last breath and turns away, forgotten. Reflected the wilderness, dogs hunting after old meat, where we failed so many times with nature, forever letting her mend broken wings, moving humbly as any housewife, her children fallen through into cradled arms. Our beautiful forgotten medicine burnt out, as if they thought bloody spur of austerity, tragedy, our selfish needs, again to loiter and stare, as if it's only their house, exploits the way we live, pointing fingers to years, science picking up pace, boundless, borderless, flimsy towers. And we watch fields on anchor crawling in and out, rising up to be born, and we looked at the ruined apartments abandoned, taking stock burning, charred shoes, sodden cobweb, upholstery. Look at what we've become, empty merry-go-rounds, slowing to chiming violins, even moving rondo creaking rusted hinges. But we've only looked blankly on the troubled screens, compelled by calamity's magnet, only 31 deaths, no prestigious injuries, Mother Medina cleaning green smock from the ground with a finger on the trigger.
Excellent read and SoundCloud there, Cal and Chinaski. This was a fantastic write. You know what really this made me think of is how quick all the nations were almost to point the finger, and it's like, you know, you guys screwed up and you did this and you did that. But the reality is that the whole world was on a race for this technology and in a race for these things. And the idea of this nuclear advancement is a worldly issue. And what also brought me to mind was almost, you know, COVID and expanding and, you know, in these disease and is everything going and scattering, you know, we like to point the finger and until it's, you know, crawling in and out in our areas and until it's in our empty merry-go-rounds. And the fact that you put it off as only 31 deaths, you know, I believe it's only like 31 or right around. Yeah, I think that's what it is as far as the official deaths that have been contributed by the, or that have been posted still to this day by the Soviet Union of the deaths that are from Chernobyl, which is crazy because it's estimated, I think, that it around like 90,000 or something even as far as from cancer and lost lives of pregnant, stillborn children and all of these different things that have happened. It's crazy that it's still pointed at 31 deaths. And to call the ground, the finger on the trigger, to say that the ground is, you know, because the ground over there does have the finger on the trigger and to end your life. So this is a great, right, Cal, and very great SoundCloud. Rex, what did you think?
I like that thought, just 31 deaths, because that hits on Eric's thought of a lexicon's Rubicon, how the word is molded to fit the narrative that is fed to the people for them to believe. Unless you do your own homework, unless you do your own digging, you're buried within the corporate crapola of stuff they want to shove down your throat as a belief system. Now, Cal, this piece, those first couple of stanzas had me thinking of what I originally hit on, that note of Oppenheimer after he saw the first nuclear explosion and realized, oh my God, I have become death, the destroyer of worlds. Those first three stanzas kind of ring in that narrative right there. And then you hit in, we've left it to the wilderness, dogs hunting after old me, where we failed so many times with nature, forever letting her mend broken wings, moving humbly as any housewife, her children falling through into cradle arms. And that notice of us forgetting to be the keepers of this world, not just the children, but the ones who are supposed to hand off a better world to the next generation, supposedly, although we keep failing in that regard immensely. And also we are, as we watch fields on edge of crawling in and out, rising up to be born, and we looked at ruined apartments abandoned, taking stock, burning, charged shoes, sodden cobweb upholstery. Yes, you leave a whole section, because then those people thought they'd be back in a couple of days, that this was not a big deal, except they didn't get to pack. They left everything in place as it was in 1986, and it still sits as it was, except for those people who go trolling and hunting for artifacts, even though they know they shouldn't be doing it. Yes, you can't help. Hey, got to do what the government says we can't do. We got to go inside. Now, the troubled screams on the back end of this, the thought of Mother Medea, I think that hits on an idea of a double note. The thought of being the helping hand, but also the one that's the deceiver, the witch, the sorceress. So where is it? Is it the helping hand, or is it the sorceress where that finger sits on the trigger? Nicely done.
Exactly. Yeah. Thank you. Both interpretations really good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, there, Rex. And Stelina, how about you?
I think a lot has been said already about some of the points that I picked up from this piece. First of all, I love the SoundCloud, because this kind of poem for me requires nothing but the voice. And I liked the fact that Cal used the reverb on this, because it gave this sort of hollow feeling to the existence of the city now, you know. So I thought that was an excellent touch with the SoundCloud. I mean, first of all, he does capture the very essence of this deserted place, you know, which is just like a living tomb, if you like, of the city. I think also what one stanza that I particularly liked here was this one: silence pungently piercing, ghostly voids that quietly lingers, sucked their last breath and turns away forgotten. Yeah, I mean, you know, this horrible thing happened and we were all aghast at the time, you know, but 36 years on, we, you know, it seems to be forgotten, it's in the past, and repercussions of this are still going on, you know, as has been mentioned, people with cancer, stillborn babies, and so it never really ends, the effect of what happened. So I like that little stanza there, you know, and I love that line, the crowd sucks her last breath and turns away forgotten. I thought that was very, very effectively done. It's a great poem throughout, you know, the imagery, the sort of emotion that's in it. And, you know, you can see from the poem itself that this is a topic that Cal really feels strongly about, and rightly so. And, you know, it's true. Big business is the thing. We don't care. Well, we care, but excuse me, but the powers that be, you know, it's just collateral damage to their business. And, you know, I remember this event and how widespread the effects were, you know, even over in the UK, in Wales, sheep were dying from the effects of this disaster. So, you know, it was a very widespread effect too. And, okay, I'm going to stop because I think I have a frog in my throat. But excellent work, Cal. Really enjoyed this poem. Bye, Swan.
Thank you, Stelina. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, dear.
And thank you, Selena, for that comment, because here in the United States, we can say that, and we can say that it's, but to have that that personal kind of story behind it, and also great way to talk about the reverb that he used. It almost seemed like a Geiger counter, almost that picked up. It almost sounds like the white noise that picked up the radiation. So very well done, Cal.
You know, that reverb gave the impression of someone walking around that deserted place after, you know, the hollowness of it. I
agree.
Thought that was great touch. Yeah.
I agree. Pam, last comment and take us to the next one.
All right. Well, Cal, first of all, I'm so glad that, it always makes me sad and angry that tragedies like this have to happen. But, you know, on a smaller scale, it makes me glad that poets like you and the other poets are moved enough by this topic to write about it. And I really appreciate that you were able to call in and join us for a bit on the show. It baffles the mind. It truly does. That, you know, the irony within so much of this tragedy, the irony that they were doing a safety check when the explosion happened, the irony that they keep insisting that officially, with finger quotations, there's only 31 deaths. And yet, as what's already been talked about, the idea of, you know, so much aftermath, so the cancers, the miscarriages, the people who continue to suffer. And I like how the finger on the trigger is talking about the ground, the earth that has become poisonous. But I feel like it also represents the idea that we have our own finger on the trigger. We keep trying to play tiny little gods, and we keep effing failing at it. This is just powerful. Our beautiful forgotten medicine burnt out as if they thought bloody spore of the austere tragedy, our selfish needs again to loiter and stare as if it's only their house, exploits the way we live, pointing fingers to years. You know, all the way through, amazing lines. And powerful, right, and very well done.
Thank you so much, ma'am. It's so important now, especially, you know, with the war and the target that we have, you know, and, you know, with these power plants, you know. Just shows to me that, the last stanza was really, that's the Mother Medina, okay, coming back to haunt us. And so we need to really be careful. You know, and thank you so much for hosting this. It's a very important subject, and I just hope that we're not so foolish. Science, you know, people are implementing, you know, when as engineers and researchers start to come up with new ideas, they always have the business after them, ready to implement hastily some inventions that may need more proofing. You know, and this is one big problem. And the pointing of the fingers has really got me, you know, what Dex brought up. That pointing of the fingers, you know, it's not just their asses, you know, it's all of our, it's our world, you know. So this is what we need to really think about.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that's a great comment there, Cal, and really appreciate you calling in and sharing that wisdom with us also. So, and that perspective as being somebody that's over in Europe and is, you know, a little closer than we are to the possibilities of what we're talking about. Well said there, Cal. And Pam, why don't you bring us to our next piece?
All right. Well, up next, I put Chernobyl by Quicken. And Selena, would you give that a read for us, please?
It would be my pleasure. Okay, so this is Chernobyl by Quicken. In shadows cast by echo time, where tragedy unfolded, a haunting chime, the world trembled beneath Chernobyl's reign, and the lesson amidst survived in abundance drove, now silenced by the fallout, a desolate home. And Chernobyl's way of ignorance, a world forever lost. Smashed in hearts, heavy with despair that nature's fury, mankind must not dare. The exclusion zone, a sacred land of pain where scars of devastation eternally remain. Whispering tales of a tragedy untold, of lives upturned from warmth to bitter cold. For in your shadows we see the fragility of life, the consequences of our actions sharp as a knife. May we heed your cautionary tales sincere and cherish this planet, our home so dear. Through darkness and despair, a glimmer of hope, a chance to heal and restore what we broke. Let this tragedy be the catalyst for change, a reminder to nurture, not to estrange. In the haunting chime of echoes gone by, may we seek wisdom and empathy, oh so high, for in the aftermath lessons lie that we may weave a future bright in the sky. And then he has prompt Mark 4. The world has already been overwhelmed by one Chernobyl and one exclusion zone. It cannot afford it anymore. It must learn the lesson from what happened in and around Chernobyl on April 26, 1986. Plokshi, I think it's pronounced. So that was his prompt. So end poem.
Great read there, Selena.
Thank you.
Right. And I see down there at the bottom, Frank Taylor, it's one of my best friend's names. So that's funny that I see that. But anyway, what a fantastic piece. Let's start with you, Pam.
All right. Well, you know, I really liked this one. I was glad to see that Quicken was inspired. He's a wonderful rhyming poet. At least the poems I've seen of his tend to rhyme and be very well done. Amazing imagery. You know, I really liked how this started out as a dark rite, which, you know, makes sense because it's on the aftermath of the Chernobyl disaster. But then I really appreciated how near the end, he puts out a message of hope, a message that perhaps we can learn from this disaster. I'll admit that the skeptic in me doesn't know if that's possible, but, you know, I do like to hold on to that little bit of light, that little bit of hope, that there are people out there that care and want to change. And I like that the line, especially, may we seek wisdom and empathy, oh so high, for in the aftermath lessons lie, that we may weave a future bright in the sky. But he also really hits hard when he says, of arrogance and ignorance, a world forever lost, a reminder etched in hearts heavy with despair that nature's fury, mankind must not dare. You know, when we hurt ourselves, when we hurt nature, she is going to strike back. So just an excellent write and very well done.
Well said there, Pam. And Cal, would you like to comment next?
Yes, this is an excellent write. And really brings in the images. I did comment, and it imprints, you know, for me, it's just a warning, you know, and also a really atmospheric, let's say, image that he painted into, and I hope into the minds of a generation now that's going to, that is, could be experiencing the same thing over again. So excellent, right? You know, especially, you know, the next to the last stanza, you know, through darkness and despair, glimmer of hope, a chance to heal and restore what we broke. You know, it gives us a glimmer of hope, you know, that it could turn around, you know, at least if it doesn't, you know, we're at least all together, you know, toward a common cause. Great, right?
Well said there, Cal. And Stelina, you read it. What did you think?
Yeah, I have to agree with everyone on this. I really like, first of all, I like the technicality of the poem. I love the rhyme. I love the flow of it. It was a great poem to read. Very nice to read. It's a beautiful poem, though it's not a beautiful subject, you know. And I also like this touch of hope, because we all want to hope that things change in our world, and all too often they don't, sadly, but we like to imagine that they will. And I particularly like the last stanza here. In the haunting chime of echoes gone by, may we seek wisdom and empathy, oh so high, for in the aftermath the lessons lie, that we may weave a future bright. There we have a great deal of hope. We do know that people exist in this world that try and make a difference, you know, as hard as it is. I also liked this stanza where he mentions the scars of devastation eternally remain, going back to what was said previously about another poem, that even though this was a long time ago, you know, there are still scars, not just on land, but on the people that went through it, on their, you know, descendants, and on us that can remember what it was like to see those poor people in that situation. So I thought this was a wonderful poem by Quicken, and very well done indeed.
Great right there, Irving. Great comment there, Stelina. And Rex, I will give you last comment here.
Well, I actually got to hand it to Quicken for actually giving a nod to the show without actually opening up with that thought of Once Upon a Time. You look at that first line, in shadows cast by echoes of our time, with tragedy and soul a haunting chime, the world trembled beneath Chernobyl's reign and learned a lesson amidst sorrow's domain. He gave that's a full note to Once Upon a Time, Once Upon a Time, without actually using it and turning it into a cheer to start the piece itself. Now, as everything else goes, there is hope. We've learned, you don't learn from anything if you don't have something to learn from. The fact that Chernobyl happened does hold that note, and yet it was the only one of its kind until Fukushima a few years ago. And that one was a whole lot worse in the moment because of what it offers, the long-term damage that might be part of that angle because of its proximity to the ocean, and the fact that most of Japan survives on seafood and what the environmental damage might be to that over long-term periods. But we may never know for quite so many years to come, not to mention everything else that goes along with that, the injuries. But I look at, you want to cheer something, you look at the older Japanese who are running that, they were the ones that ran in. They knew they had earned their life. They gave their lives to let the young ones progress further down the road, which is something of a remarkable feat in and of itself. You think about it, giving your life so the young can live. A nice note there that most don't offer up or even think about these days. And this does walk in up there. I can't believe after it's been 70 years of using nuclear power, and we have not yet found a way to take the last dregs of power and poison out of the used uranium that we have. There's something wrong in that equation.
Great, great comment, Rex, and I 100% am with you. You know, we're not putting our money towards the right things here. Pam, let's bring it back to you, and where are we heading to next?
All right. Well, up next, I'm going to put the
subject.
Can I
just interrupt? Sorry, I have to run, but I just wanted to say well done on the show and to all the poets and a very, very good topic that you chose here, Dex. So well done, my dear. And it was nice to share a little bit of time with you. But I'm sorry, I have to leave now. So enjoy the show.
Yeah, me too.
Yep,
thank you so much for the theme
and
for
thank you,
hosting.
Thank you, Selena, and thank you, Cal. So next we have
by
our... Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate you so
and
much.
Well
for your
done,
support.
All poets. Well done, all poets. Brilliant work. Okay, enjoy the rest of the show. I'll catch it later.
Bye,
Rex. Hi, Rex. Bye, Dex. Dex and Rex. It's a good deal, actually. Okay. Yeah, I'm sure. Okay. Love you all. Bye.
All right. So, that was really awesome that Selena got to call in. I was glad she could join us. And up next, we have The Beast by Arcana Moore. And Arcana supplied us with a SoundCloud. And here we go.
Prologue, April 26, 1986. 1:23:58 a.m. Chernobyl, Ukraine. Inexperienced eyes watch over the dreaming beast as it grunts contentedly in its uranium dioxide lair. Nuclides dance in the blood of its plutonium heart, amid restless ripples tethered to a chain reaction. With a jolt, it awakens, growling a steaming yawn, nursing pressurized throbs of climbing severity, unaware of the flawed existence it strives to endure, howling as pain intensifies beyond its threshold. Agony sears its lungs with burning fission. It gulps water voraciously to cool its throat. But the steam relentlessly burns each breath as rage replaces the sting of sufferance. Finally, the beast erupts in a fiery frenzy, exploding with the fury of a nuclear scream, spewing a fireball high in the clear night sky, bleeding forth cesium and iodine ichor. Incandescent horns of graphite blaze brightly, raining down death that falls from its throes, the beast collapses with a smouldering heart. Mewling wounded bellows of molten misery. An aftermath of fallout weeps the beast's torment. Fingers point blame at those invoking its wrath. If only they'd allowed it to rest undisturbed instead of clumsily arousing its peaceful slumber. Now, the beast lies buried in a concrete sarcophagus, testimony to the intensity of its contaminated cries. While life there struggles to regain a dying foothold, among lingering laments from absent ghosts.
Holy shit. What a fantastic piece here by Arcana. Really personifying the beast that was within. And going deep into it, the unaware flaw that existed to endure, the growling, you know, they were pushing it past what it could do, and they were really pushing it and then doing the safety test, but it was ignoring the growling and steaming yawn. And the strives to endure, and he really personified the beast that is this nuclear essence, this nuclear particles that are in there, and he captured this entire thing. The sound call was so perfect when it said exploding with the fury of the nuclear system, and it went and it growled behind him, because it really truly was as people have described before, from the depths of hell, and it was invisible on how it inflicted on people, but it was so ugly. It is such an ugly thing. This was an incredible piece. Rex, what did you think?
This reminded me of a movie back in the day. It was funny. It came out just 7 years before this happened. The China Syndrome with Jack Lemmon and I can't remember anybody else at the moment. But Jack Lemmon was one who was fighting the company itself and wanting to get out the dangers of what was actually happening, because I think this part of it was built on a fault line and the structure wasn't sound, and the possibility of that note of the China Syndrome, where the reactor burns its way clear to China, so to speak, was very prominent in the day. The fact that film came out 7 years before this one, this happened, says quite a bit to the fear that walked around at that time. The eyes of Arcana did an outrageous job with that that SoundCloud and the notes of the beast, the awakening, the arousal, the venting steam. Oh, that was a clever and perfect way to offer this up, and the note to inducing full body meaning and emotion into that beast itself, even though it's an inanimate object, but giving it life. That was clever.
Well said there, Rex. Pam.
Yeah, this is wonderful. Oh my goodness. You know you've written something good when you get the host of the show to say, holy shit. So, you know, just saying.
Yeah, exactly.
But this was quite the performance. Oh, my goodness gracious. All the way through, an amazing read, great use of sound effects. Now, I was trying to do some quick research, but I just couldn't quite find the answer. But I'm pretty sure, and I will have to look this up and let you know when I know I'm 100% right, but I don't believe this is actually technically personification, because he refers to it as a beast, like a monster or an animal-like creature. Like, I actually think there's a – in fact, I know there's a word specifically for when someone gives an object the characteristics of an animal or a monster, because I've talked about this with someone before who used that in their poetry. I just can't remember what the word is, which isn't very helpful, but they're just...
No, but that's appreciative, yeah. Because that's what he did. He exactly did what you're talking about, so that's much appreciated on your insight.
Yeah, well, I wish I could be a little more helpful, but I will find that. And very similar to personification, because he does create this monster from this explosion, from this nuclear energy. Just a powerful line. I like how he speaks on this as the awakening of a great beast, as if the idea that we have lost control. And I like how he writes about how that continues even years after this tragedy. More tragedies continue, more deaths line up, and there are still the ghosts that haunt this empty place. I really like this all the way through, but especially finally the beast erupts in a fiery frenzy, exploding with the fury of a nuclear scream, spewing a fireball high in the clear night sky, bleeding forth casium and iodine ichor. Just amazing lines and very well done.
Would that word be prosopopoeia?
It might be. It might be. It sounds familiar. What is the meaning of prosopopoeia?
It's a rhetorical device in which a speaker or writer communicates to the audience by speaking as another person or object.
That could be.
Yeah.
That could be. I was thinking, though, that there that does sound like it could be part of it, but what I was thinking of is there's actually a word for meaning that giving the characteristics of an animal to an inanimate object.
Okay.
But I think you're going to
appreciate you looking it up, Rex. We're
there,
heading
Rex.
In the right direction. Yeah, we're heading
yes.
in the right
yes.
direction
yes.
there.
Definitely. He's definitely in a more right direction than I was. I'm just like, I get so
yeah.
lost when I do my Google searches.
I know.
All
well,
right.
Pam,
well,
bring us to the next one here.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and get one last poem in, and then we'll have some carryovers for next week. And grab the next one, and our last poem for the night, and then we will have carryovers, will be The Ghost Town of Ukraine, that is Pripyat, and by Jenny the Deep. And Dexter, would you give that a read for us, please?
Absolutely. The Ghost Town of Ukraine, that is Pripyat. Once upon a time, on April 26, 1986, Chernobyl disaster made a city sick. Some survived, forever to suffer, while the rest of the nuclear blast killed 30-plus operators. To this day, Chernobyl remains radioactive, while the government seems to stay passive-aggressive. Nuclear blast created a ghost town called Pripyat. Abandoned and untouchable, even the most percipient. Praying for Ukraine now and then and now. First catastrophic, merciless explosions, melting towns. Now a ruthless Russian invasion with no end in sight. and deadly persuasions. When will destruction and terror come to an end? Everything nearly contaminated, even the river bends. I fear that the last until the human race is eradicated. Mistakes and violence is how we are to be obliterated. End poem. And Pam, why don't you start us with comments?
Great read there, Dexter, and a great write by Jenny. She really, I love the way she stands on the soapbox and shouts out, but in a kind of a almost gentle voice, but still gets her point across. This has great social commentary on the idea of humanity destroying itself, you know, and I like the use of the phrase passive aggressive in this. To this day, Chernobyl remains radioactive while the government seems to stay passive aggressive. Nuclear blasts created a ghost town called Pripyat, abandoned and untouchable even by the most percipient. You know, and I like that she brings in the spiritual element of prayers needed for Chernobyl, or not, for the Ukraine, not only for the continuing effects of Chernobyl, but for what they're going through now. And I like that she brings in the question, when will destruction and terror come to an end? That is such an important question. And sadly, I don't think any one of us knows the answer at this time. So amazing write and very well done.
Pam, Rex, you got a short one for it?
Sure. Jenny paints a bleak picture, and she doesn't see a way out of it. But, hey, I am hopeful, Jenny. I see things and I hear things. It'll get better. It's bleak right now, but that won't last. We have to hit the precipice before we actually move into something a little better.
Amen to
that.
Thank you, Rex. Well
said. Amen to that. And I want to first off thank Phil for giving me a call and saying that she wanted to kick off a new show. So, Phil, thank you so much for keeping me in mind. Pam, I can't thank you enough for being willing to do this and to share this with me for the new show. Thank you, Rex, for calling in. Thank you, Selena, for calling in. Thank you, Cal, for calling in. Thank you all of the writers that showed up and all of the people that were on the board and people that showed up for the first show. I was very took back by the amount of support that, you know, I received or that we received for this whole thing, because I was worried for a while. I'm like, God, I don't know if anybody really is going to tune in for this show. And then all of a sudden, all old friends and new friends came out for this. And it was just a stunning, you know, showing. We have a new contest that's going to be coming up that is going to be about, unfortunately, the title is going to be Clowns, Courtyard Gestures, and the Freak Shows. And so we're going to be tackling the history of freak shows, old turn-of-the-century clowns, and also gestures. Courtyard Gestures, which is going to be obviously the ones that were living higher in the hog than the other couple. So it's going to be another dark show, another dark piece of history, some of the entertainers that we've had. And so, Pam, do you have anything that you want to say at the end here?
Great show, Dexter. Thank you to everyone for all your support, Cal, Selena, and Rex, for calling in, and thank you to everyone who hung out on the board. Shout out to Gene, and just absolutely an amazing show. I'm so excited to be a part of this.
Thank you. Good night, all.
Good night.